reading from the 10th canto, excuse me, 9th canto, 10th chapter, text 9. 9:10:9. Is that correct?
Rakshasvasuvyakritarupam ashuta buddhes.
Rakshasvasuvyakritarupam ashuta buddhes.
Tasya karatrishira dushana mokyat bandhum.
Tasya karatrishira dushana mokyat bandhum.
Jagye chaturdasha sahasram aparaniya.
Jagye chaturdasha.
Kodanda pane atama na uvasa kritram.
Kodanda pane atama na uvasa kritram.
Rakshasvasu.
Rakshasvasu.
Avshupanaka.
Avshupanaka.
The sister of the Rakshasa Ravana.
The sister of the Rakshasa Ravana.
Pyakrita.
Pyakrita.
Lord Rama.
Lord Rama.
Deformed.
Deformed.
Not that Lord Rama is deformed. Lord Rama deformed her. Rupam.
Rupam.
The form.
The form.
Ashuddha Buddhe.
Ashuddha Buddhe.
Because of her intelligence, because her intelligence was polluted by lusty desires. Tasyaha.
Of her.
Kara Trishira Dushana Mukya Bandhum. Dushana Mukya Bandhum. Many friends headed by Kara. You're not going to get this. Okay, we'll do it. Piece by piece. Many friends headed by Kara.
Many friends headed by Kara.
Trishira.
Trishira.
And Dushana.
And Dushana.
Jagne.
Jagne.
He.
He.
Lord Ramchandra.
Lord Ramchandra.
Killed.
Killed.
Chaturdasha Sahasram.
Chaturdasha Sahasram.
14,000.
14,000.
Aparaniya.
Aparaniya.
Invincible.
Invincible.
Kodanda.
Kodanda.
Bows and arrows.
Bows and arrows.
Pani.
Pani.
In his hand.
In his hand.
Atamanaha.
Atamanaha.
Wandering in the forest.
Wandering in the forest.
Vasa.
Vasa.
Live there.
Live there.
Kritram.
Kritram.
With great difficulties.
With
while wandering in the forest, where he accepted a life of hardship, carrying his invincible bow and arrows in his hand, Lord Ramachandra deformed Ravana's sister, who was polluted with lusty desires, by cutting off her nose and ears. He also killed her 14,000 Rakshasa friends headed by Karta, Trishira, and Dushana. One could say that if she never showed up in the forest with lusty desires for Lord Ram, then Ravana would have never kidnapped Sita and there'd be no Ramayana. And this chapter would not exist in the Bhagavatam because that was the cause. Because she lied to Ravana out of revenge. And she told Ravana, there's this beautiful woman named Sita, and she would make the perfect wife for you. And I tried to get her. And this is what they did. They chopped my nose off. So she incited him. And he said, I will kidnap this Sita. So it was all Suparnaka's fault that Sita was kidnapped. Not exactly. Because in any drama, you need a writer and a director. So who wrote the drama of Ramayana? Krishna wrote it, Lord Ram wrote it. And who directed it? Lord Ram, through his yoga maya potency. So everything that happened was perfect. So it was part of the transcendental leela that there would be someone like Suparnaka, there would be someone like Ravana. And Lord Ram would engage their evil propensities in his leelas. Hare Krishna. So there's no purport. We'll go to the next text. I'll just read the translation. And then one more verse, and then there's a purport. This is text number 10. O King Parikshit, when Ravana, who had 10 heads on his shoulders, heard about the beautiful and attractive features of Sita, his mind was agitated by lusty desires. And he went to kidnap her. How many wives did Ravana have? Does anybody know? How many? 10,000. More than one, anyway. he had a lot of wives. So, what's going on here? No matter how many wives someone has, they may always want another one. There was a thing on the internet, it said, if I just had a Rolex watch, then I would be happy. Right? So you can ask any person on the street. You know, I read this on the internet, if I just had a Rolex watch, I'd be happy. What about you? What do you need to be happy? And they'll think, well, if I just had this. And then you say, would you be happier if you had it, or would you be happier if you didn't have the desire to have it in the first place? Good question, right? Yeah. To distract Lord Ramachandra from his ashram, Ravana sent Maricha in the form of a golden deer. And when Lord Ramachandra saw that wonderful deer, he left his residence and followed it, and finally killed it with a sharp arrow, just as Lord Shiva killed Daksha. So now we go to text 11. Maricha was sent by Ravana to distract Lord Ramachandra from their little hermitage. And as you know the story, Maricha yelled out, Bharat! Bharat! Save me! It wasn't, and Bharat knew it wasn't Lord Ram, and Bharat knew Lord Ram doesn't need to be saved. He saves everybody. But by Yogamaya's influence, Sita forced him and insulted him and said, you just want to stay here with me because you're lusty. And it said, he never looked at her. He only looked at her feet. So, in any way, you know, he had to go. She just shamed him so much. And then Ravana came, guised, dressed as a sannyasi, begging some alms. So this is text 11. When Ramchandra entered the forest, and Lakshman, Lakshman, was also absent, the worst of the Rakshasas, Ravana, kidnapped Sita Devi, the daughter of the king avideha. Just as a tiger seizes unprotected sheep when the shepherd is absent. Then Lord Ramachandra wandered in the forest with his brother Lakshmana, as if very much distressed due to separation from his wife. Thus, he showed by his personal example the condition of a person attached to women. Oh. Do I have to do this verse today? One time, there was a verse that I was asked to give, and it was a verse like this, you know, about women, and about women, and more about women, and all the wonderful things about women that aren't in the Bhagavatam. The other things about women. So I was staying with the God brother, and I said, what do you think I should say? He just said, call in sick. Just tell him you can't give class. So, Hare Krishna. In this verse, the words Sri Sanginam Gatim Iti indicate that the condition of a person attached to women was shown by the Lord Himself. Of course, the devotees aren't attached to women. We already know that, so it doesn't apply to us, right? It's kind of funny, you know? Sometimes you'll find a man, he'll say, I'm not attached to women, I don't think about women. I mean, I know, I don't dream about them, I don't talk about them. And they've been talking about them for the last 5 minutes. How detached they are. Like, hello, Prabhu. It's funny, isn't it? According to moral instructions, this must be Chanakya Pandit or some Nyaya Shastra. Grihe Narim Vivarjaya. When one goes on a tour, one should not bring his wife. Well, some of you are going to have to leave. Some of you men are going to have to leave, or some of you women. No. One time, some devotees were traveling, and they were traveling alone, and Prabhupada said, where's your wife? And they said, she didn't come, and Prabhupada said, you should always travel with your wife. You know, it's protection. You never know what will happen, you know. Formerly, men used to travel without conveyances, but still, as far as possible, when one leaves home, one should not take his wife with him, especially if one is in such a condition as Lord Ramachandra when banished by the order of his father. So, by nature's arrangement, generally, men can tolerate more austerity than women. And so, gentlemen, if you're going on a vacation, and you're walking through the forest like 14 hours a day, barefoot. If your wife says, and you're camping under a tree without a tent, and your wife says, it might be a little austere for me, don't bring her. That's the idea. But Lord Ramachandra told that to Sita, and Sita said, no, I'm coming. So he let her come. But look what happened now that she came, right? Created so many problems. Hare Krishna. It's a problem if you're with him, a problem if you're not with him. It's always a problem. If you're not with him, you miss him. If you're with him, you get tired of him. You know, it's like, the best thing is to go back to Godhead. That's what I say. I always say that when people come to me with problems, you know, that I can't solve. It's like, you know, well, don't worry, when you go back to Godhead, this problem won't be there. Yeah. Whether in the forest or at home, if one is attached to women, this attachment is always troublesome, as shown by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his personal example. So this also means women attached to men. So, we were having class last night, and we were saying, well, it's natural to have affection for your wife, for your mother, your sister, like that. But having affection and being attached is different, because Attached means I want to enjoy the person. That's what it means to be attached. Because why would you become attached to something that doesn't give you enjoyment? You wouldn't. Would you? I mean, think of something you have that you don't need. Why don't you need it? It's of no use to you. It doesn't give you anything. So if it doesn't give you anything, you don't become attached to it. And if something gives you pleasure, you become attached to it. And the more it gives you pleasure, the more you're attached to it, right? And that's why jnana yoga is see how everything in this world ultimately causes suffering. Because if you see something that causes suffering, you become detached from it. And the more you enjoy something, the more you become attached to it. So that's the philosophy. So I can have affection without attachment. Because attachment means I want to enjoy this, right? So, theoretically speaking, no man should think I should enjoy my wife, but he has affection because he'll protect her. Out of affection, he'll take care of her, but he's not the enjoyer. So the problem is not the wife or the husband. The problem is the attachment to enjoying the wife or husband. The problem is not anything. It's the attachment to enjoying it, right? So you can have the whole world and be detached. Or you can be a guy on the street and have really very little and be attached to all of it. So that's what it means. When you say attachment to women, attachment to enjoying them. So we are servants. We're servants. And as servants, we're not attached to enjoying, we're attached to serving. I have some news for you. Learned in the school of hard knocks, men, this is for the men, but women just changed the name of men to women to men. You cannot enjoy women. I've tried. You don't have to try. It doesn't work. But if you want to have a good relationship, if you serve them, you can enjoy them in a different way. But sensually, you can't. It doesn't work. You don't even have to try. Take my word for it. Of course, you don't need me to tell you because you've already tried and you know. But if you want to enjoy, then you serve. That's where enjoyment comes. That's where satisfaction comes in service. If you try to enjoy, forget it. You will suffer like a dog in the street. Right? And if you don't believe me, just turn on the radio because every song is about that. Right? And then you get attached to enjoying, and then your girl runs off with your best friend. And then you write a blues song. Right? Yeah, so. But if you want to be happy and satisfied, it's all about service. You're just a servant, you're not a master. You're not an enjoyer. You can't be. That position is reserved for Krishna. Krishna knows how to do it in grand style. He can marry 16,000 wives, have 10 kids with each, no problem. One palace for each. 16,108 times 10, that's a lot of kids. I have one, that was enough. One kid, one wife, I got it up to here, you know. Barely take care of it. You know what Prabhupada said, I was told? Prabhupada said managing his family was more difficult than managing ISKCON. Wow. Hare Krishna. So, you know, trying to enjoy is a lot of work because you can't actually do it. You can just work all your life trying to do it. But when you serve, then you feel then you're actually happy. So that's important. That's what Prabhupada means. Of course, this is the material side of Sri Sanghi, but the situation of Lord Ramchandra is spiritual, for he does not belong to the material world. Narayana paro vyaktat. Narayana is beyond the material creation. Because he is the creator of the material world, he is not subject to the conditions of the material world. The separation of Lord Ramchandra from Sita is spiritually understood as vipralamba, which is an activity of the ladini potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, belonging to the Sringara Rasa, the mellows of conjugal love in the spiritual world. So Krishna left Vrindavan and he said, I'm coming back this afternoon, or maybe tomorrow, or maybe next week, or maybe 2 weeks. And as we know, tomorrow came, and next week came, and next month came, and he didn't come back. And when we read that, we're thinking, Krishna, you're so cruel. How could you do that? You ever think like that, Krishna? Like, how could Krishna do that? That's so cruel. I don't know if I like him anymore. So, and then years, the Brajvasis are crying, emaciated, not eating, they're suffering. And everyone's looking at Krishna, like, what's going on here? You know, like, they're dying without you. Why don't you go back? And Krishna is dying without them, and he's thinking, I can't go back. Because if I go back, they're already suffering. And if I go back again, and then I leave again, that's it, they'll all die. Well, that's one reason. But the actual, more important reason was, Krishna knew, because he's a connoisseur of love. So he mixes up love potions. So, So in Krishna's little laboratory where he mixes up his love potions, he's thinking, okay, if I leave Vrindavan, the separation that the residents of Vrindavan feel is going to increase. And in that separation, they're going to think of me more and their love is going to increase. So I'm going to leave Vrindavan. That's what Krishna was thinking. And Krishna was also, his love was increasing. Now, externally, it looks like pain. Everybody's crying, heartbroken. Krishna's heartbroken also. He's sleeping at night in Dwarka. And what is he saying in his sleep? Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. But he does it to increase their love. So, and then, you know, Lord Ramachandra and Sita and separation, it's all lila. It's all chemistry, cooking up love potion number 9. You know, there was a song called Love Potion Number 9. So Krishna cooks up love potions in his leelas. In the spiritual world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has all the dealings of love, displaying the symptoms called sattvikar, sanchari, vilapa, murcha, and urumada. Thus, when Lord Ramachandra was separated from Sita, all these spiritual symptoms were manifest, different kinds of ecstasies and madness. The Lord is neither impersonal nor impotent. Rather, he is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, the eternal form of knowledge and bliss. Thus, he has all the symptoms of spiritual bliss. Feeling separation from one's beloved is also an item of spiritual bliss. As explained by Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, Radha Krishna Pranaya Viriktir Dadini Shakti, the dealings of love between Radha and Krishna are displayed as the pleasure potency of the Lord. The Lord is the original source of all pleasure, the reservoir of all pleasure. Lord Ramchandra, therefore, manifested the truth, both spiritually and materially. Materially, those who are attached to women suffer, but spiritually, when there are feelings of separation between the Lord and his pleasure potency, the spiritual bliss of the Lord increases. This is further explained in Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashrita param bhavam ajanatam mama bhuta maheshwaram. One who does not know the spiritual potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead thinks of the Lord as an ordinary human being, but the Lord's mind, intelligence, and senses can never be affected by material conditions. And there's five verses. I think I'll skip because of time. One who does not know the spiritual potency of the Supreme Personality. Oh, yeah, I read that. It was actually impossible for Ravana to take away Sita. The form of Sita taken by Ravana was an illusory representation of Mother Sita, Maya Sita. When Sita was tested in the fire, this Maya Sita was burnt, and the real Sita came out of the fire. What this means is that just like in order to worship the deity, you have to be qualified. To worship Gaur-Nitai, anybody can do it, initiated or not initiated. But if you're going to worship in the temple, especially Radha Krishna, Shalagram, Girirash, and so forth, you need to be initiated as a Brahmin. That's qualification. And the mantras that you use in the puja are mantras you get when you're initiated, and you have to get a mantra from a guru for it to have power. And then you have to live a particular lifestyle to be qualified. Otherwise, you can't. You can't worship the deity. And even if you do, you're not worshiping. This Krishna's not there, not accepting the worship. So similarly, it's impossible for Ravana to associate with Sita because he's not qualified. Just as we couldn't worship Sita on the altar. What speak of Ravana, who's just lusting after her? So, as the story goes, when he took what he thought was Sita, Agni had taken Sita away and created a Maya Sita. So all Ram got was a Maya Sita, not the real thing. He's not qualified for the real thing. But anyway, so you might say, oh, now you tell me. That was such an exciting story. It wasn't even Sita that he stole. But still, for the Leela, Lord Ram accepted that that Sita was stolen, and he went to rescue her. And then we know, as the story goes, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, they rescue Sita. Ram Leela is such a tragedy. You go through all this trouble, so many years, fight this whole war, so many people killed, just to rescue Sita. And then Lord Ram rescues Sita, and then he thinks, wait a minute, you were at the home of another man. I can't take you back. Because that's the Vedic standard. If your wife spends one night at the house of some other, maybe other than her family, the husband will not take her back. I'm not saying you should do that, but that was the standard. So he thought, I can't take you back. You are the home of another man. And Sita said, yes, but he never touched me. But Ram was thinking, no, but this is wrong. So she said, I will walk in the fire, and if I was unchaste, I will die. And he said, okay, we need to prove to the world that you're chaste, because I can't have an unchaste woman as the queen. So she walked in the fire, and what happened? So because she was stolen by Agni, she came out of the fire as Sita. And the Maya Sita went in the fire. And the real Sita came. That's what we call in English the backstory. You make a movie and this and that. Okay, what's the backstory? How did you do that? It shows you jumping off a mountain. Like, how did you do that? Did you actually jump off a mountain and they caught you? What's the backstory? Oh, there was a little string, but in post-production they erased the string and I was jumping down and they were holding it. Something like, oh, the backstory. Like that. Yeah. A further understanding to be derived from this example is that a woman, however powerful she may be in the material world, must be given protection. For as soon as she is unprotected, she will be exploited by Rakshasas like Ravana, and also car dealers and car mechanics. They like to exploit women, right? So, you know, women, all you have to do is learn like five words about an engine. And when you bring your car in to be repaired, you go, well, you know, I think it's the, you know, the fuel injection system, you know, is clogged, you know, or, you know, like, and they're like, oh, okay, I can't cheat her. She knows something about cars. That's my little joke. You know, women like, what do we need to be protected from? Car mechanics. Definitely. And a few other things, you know. A few other, you know, unsavory guys on the street, right? Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not, it's, you know, we say women need to be protected. You know, some women think, oh, you know, I'm as good as a guy. But, you know, bodies are different. They don't, you know, you don't have boxing matches between men and women. It's not fair, right? I mean, some women could beat up some men, but that's for sure. But professional heavyweight woman and professional heavyweight men, they're never going to do that. It's not fair. The body's different. So there are some differences, you know, where women get exploited, so they should be protected. That's the man's job. Here are the words. Vaideha Raja Duhitari indicate that before Mother Sita was married to Lord Ramchandra, she was protected by her father, Videha Raj. And when she was married, she was protected by her husband. Therefore, the conclusion is that a woman should always be protected. According to Vedic rule, there is no scope for a woman being independent, for a woman cannot protect herself independently. You want to hear something interesting? Up till maybe 1920 or 1930, in New York City, United States of America, very liberal place, a single woman, it was illegal for her to rent an apartment. Did you know that? Isn't that interesting? It's considered unsafe. I mean, it was probably a lot safer then, I would think, than today. So this, you know, this concept of protecting women, it's not like some antiquated Vedic idea that's like totally old-fashioned and this and that. It was just a law, and probably a law in many places if it were a law in America. Right? So that's, you know, it's the nature, the nature of men to want to exploit women, and they need to be protected. Right? It's just a reality. Yes. So, we'll end class here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir. How come the man with many mics doesn't have a wireless mic?
Because it's on top of it, and I can't find it now.
Oh, I can't find it. Oh, okay. Did we take it to the retreat? Is that why?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's in the van, I think, I hope. Yeah, okay.
So, Prabhupada, thank you very much for making many relevant points on this issue. And since we are by this issue, I would like to ask if you could give some few words on this statement, women are less intelligent. Good luck.
Prabhu, I have to go to the bathroom, right? Can we talk about it later?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about it is Prabhupada said all kinds of things about it. And one of the things Prabhupada said, he wrote a letter, maybe it was 1969 or something, to one woman. She was the wife of the temple president. And he said,
He said, you know, in Vedic culture, it was only the men who preached. The men were acharyas. It was the women, that was the culture. They stayed home and took care of the family. And then Prabhupada said, but in Bhagavad Gita, it said, Striyo Vaishyastata Shudras, any man, woman, they're all equally qualified or equally unqualified, Kali Yuga. You know, that's one way of looking at it. You know, we're all equally unqualified. But Krishna is saying, you're all qualified to take shelter in me. It doesn't matter who you are, what ashram, or what varna, or what gender. So then Prabhupada told her and said, you as women, you're competent to preach. You know, this is Krishna's certification, you should go out and preach. So there are those statements. You know, so the statement, women less intelligent, I will get to it, but the first point I want to make is Prabhupada never kept women down from what they were qualified to do. Right? So you can't arbitrarily say you're not qualified on the basis of, well, it says you're less intelligent. But what does less intelligent mean? How is that verse defining intelligence? Is it IQ? Did they have IQ tests when this was said? You know, when in the Manu Samhita it said women are less intelligent. Manu Samhita is pretty old. Like, you know, maybe a billion years, I don't know, or many, many hundreds of millions. I don't think the IQ test is that old, do you? So, it's not talking about that. So, that's the first point. And Rukmini, our god sister, she said once Prabhupada came to New York or Boston, and he was saying to the devotees, you should all open temples. Because in the early days of the movement, the focus was on opening temples. Prabhupada asked us to open 108 temples around the world. He said, I would like you to open 108 temples before I die. So he said, I would like you to all open temples. And then Rukmini raised her hand. She said, even the girls, and she was probably like 18 at that time. Prabhupada said, yes, even the girls. So my realization, you can take it or leave it, my realization, replace the word intelligence with, wherever Prabhupada says less intelligent, just say that means Prabhupada saying they should be protected. It's not that they're less capable, but by nature, women are more trusting, which means they'll trust someone who's going to cheat them. So trusting is a good quality when you come to spiritual life, but it can backfire in the material life. Women tend to be more materially attached. Just look at how these guys are dressed and look at how these ladies are dressed, and that says a lot, doesn't it? Right? Right? Like, the men don't care so much about...
It's not attachment, it's just that they're pretty.
Exactly.
Well, all right. That's another way of saying. Women are more attached to how they look in general than men. Not that some men aren't more. Generally more attached to home, family, like that. But it's not a criticism, it's just nature. It's nature. So that's part of what it means. So the idea of men protecting in the Grihastha ashram, the man is supposed to be, because he's a man, like very intelligent, he's not swayed by emotion. That's what it means to be intelligent in this sense. You know? So many bad things can be happening, and you know, and your wife's upset and nervous, and you're just like, Dira, you know, we're going to get through this, just, you know. She's like, okay, you know, what should we do? And that's supposed to be the man. Because the woman is not constituted where she can only act on intelligence. Emotion and intelligence, they work together. Where a man can just act on intelligence and shut off his emotions. So men are more intelligent in that sense. Not every man, but that's the theory behind it. So, I'm a man, I can sleep on the floor, you know, I can eat wood for breakfast, you know. I'm brahmacharya.
We eat wood for breakfast. Try giving the women wood for breakfast. It's not going to work. But we, Brahmacharis, we sleep on the floor. We eat wood. So that's the idea, you know, in theory. Of course, it's Kali Yuga, so it's all mixed up. So if a woman becomes too overcome in her spiritual progress by material attachment or material emotion, the intelligent man is supposed to protect her. Like, don't give in to that. But also in Kali Yuga, it's just men want to exploit women. So that's another aspect of protection. Don't let men exploit women. Don't let them cheat you. Especially when you go to get your car repaired. I once drove into a shop. They said, I was on the road, middle of nowhere, and the car was like that. And so we went in, and the guy said, you need a valve job, it's going to be $700, and you know, it'll take all day. And I said to my wife, let's get a second opinion. And so we went to another garage, and he looked at it, and one of the spark plugs was loose, so he just tightened it, and the engine worked. And I said, we owe you anything? No. So it took him 1 minute to tighten it, and that was, you know. So, you know, things like that happen, right? So when I read Less Intelligent, I hear Prabhupada saying, he's talking to men, not to demean women. He's telling men you should protect them. They're less intelligent means you are supposed to be. And they're not always. But sometimes they're more than you are. But it's because it's Kali Yuga. But you know, in the ideal world, you know, the men are like, they're super fixed, intelligent. You know, women are going like, I never met any of those guys. Send one my way, you know, when you find him. But that's the idea. You know, so does your wife know more about certain things than you do? Yeah. Is she more intelligent certain things than you do? Now, if I'm a diehard, women are less intelligent, and I need heart surgery, then I have two choices, a female surgeon or a male butcher. Because I think women are less intelligent, definitely I'll take the male butcher, right? Because men are smarter. Yeah, no. So it probably never meant it like that. I think the most important thing for men and women to learn is that if we take this to mean as women we're incapable or incompetent, then you're going to start acting like you're incapable and incompetent. That's definitely not what Prabhupada wanted you to do. And Prabhupada always said, if you become a devotee, then you're not less intelligent. So one day, I had the same question you had. I mean, we all have this question. I said, okay, I am going to go through Prabhupada's books and search the word less intelligent. What do you think I found? Like, not that many women are less intelligent, but hundreds, if not thousands, if you don't surrender to Krishna, you're less intelligent. So now, we have men, of course, are more intelligent, and women, of course, are less intelligent, but you have men who aren't devotees and women who are. So who's more intelligent? Mix that up with Kali Yuga, and everything is crazy in Kali Yuga. You know, you have men like women, women like men, and nowadays, you know, how do you what is a man? How would you define a woman? Now we don't even have definitions anymore what men and women are, isn't it? That's a whole other talk, right? So it's getting really, Kali Yuga is getting really mixed up, right? So men should not demean women. Women should not demean themselves. You, whatever you're qualified to do, you're qualified to do. And do it. And I think when a woman is married, she sees a man and she knows the difference and she can figure it out for herself if her husband's more intelligent than she is. And sometimes she'll go, yeah, now I understand. You know, when I get upset about things, he's very calm and he can deal with it. And he really, I have that protection. I know. You know, if things get shaky and difficult, he's there. He's always sober. But in some cases, he'll melt down before she will. Right? He may not be strong. And so she may be stronger than him sometimes. It's Kali Yuga. And that's why when Prabhupada was asked by Jadarani, is it true women are less intelligent? And Prabhupada said, well, if you think you're a woman, then you're less intelligent. And then he joked, you know, 32 ounce. It was really difficult for us. Your spiritual master says something that there's no scientific evidence for. And you're like, Prabhupada said women's brains are 32 ounce. Marilyn Monroe's brain was like 52. The most intelligent person has an IQ of 2005 and it's a woman. You know, like, how do you like make sense of all these things? And then we, you know, we learned that was something Prabhupada learned in his, I don't know what class, psychology class or something. And you can ask Tanya, because she studied psychology, and she can tell you all the different theories over the years and how they've changed. So we realized, oh yeah, that was the theory, that's what they thought then. But Prabhupada used to go with that, he wanted to go with it. So this question again came up, Prabhupada, are women less intelligent? He said, when women become devotees, then their brain grows to 64 ounces. So he was joking. You know. So the two worst things that I've seen, when this is misunderstood, is men demean women. Well, you're just less intelligent. You don't know anything. Which is not true, because if my wife wasn't as intelligent as she is, she wouldn't have married me. Because, you know, anyone who picked me must be intelligent, right? And and women should not think, oh, I'm a woman, I can't do anything, I'm useless. I'm just a big bag of emotions and I can't make any decisions, I don't know what to do, I just have to ask men. Then we'll have this like really weird movement of completely disempowered women and these like men who think they're God's gift to the universe and no woman can compare to them. So we don't want to create that, but this statement, misunderstood, could create that, or has created that. You've probably seen it, right? So that, you know, we don't want to bring women into the Hare Krishna movement and then disempower them. But Prabhu, I have 74 PhDs. You're just a less intelligent woman. It doesn't matter. And we men know so many intelligent women, you know, much more intelligent than we are. So that general idea of men being more intelligent is generally men are more spiritually capable, which is Kali Yuga, which we know is just a generalization. It's not necessarily true. But, you know, generally, so women don't take sannyas, but women, you have very renounced women. I find these questions hard to answer because Kali Yuga mixes everything up. It's really hard to just get pure female, pure male. And it's going to get more confusing now because people are really confused about what men and women are. What do you say? What do you think?
Yes. A sub-question.
Okay. Did I get myself in trouble yet? Or?
No, not at all. I find it really, really nice what you said. If you don't mind, I would like to give a three quote that come in my mind.
Then yeah, of course, this of course, question. Of course.
Once I read a statement from Prabhupada where he says, Now I can see that in our moment, our girls are more intelligent than our boys.
Yes.
One statement. Second, girls are like young boys. And then I thought, well, I know many men, very often I would include myself, who are like young boys. So if you are, as a man, like a young boy, how can you claim to be more intelligent than women? Would be my reason to it. And then a third statement, where Prabhupada says, which goes in line with what you said, women are less intelligent means they're very often more inclined to material things. So Prabhupada says they're more in tamas and rajas, that means they're less intelligent. But now the sub question I heard.
But once you become Krishna conscious, you're not.
Exactly. You're
at least sattvic. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ideally, anyway.
Yeah. So my question would be: I heard a very interesting statement, which goes, the men are more generally more intelligent than women of the same varna. So that was kind of perfectly clicking for me, because if you have a woman who is born in a Brahmin family, raised as a Brahmin, and then you have a person who is really low class, the mechanic who exploits women, well, if you generalize, all men are more intelligent than women, I think that would be very, very improper to say. So maybe if you could comment a little bit on this statement, men are generally more intelligent than women of the same varna.
Well, I think that statement by Prabhupada, where he said when women become devotees, you know, his joke, but he was serious. Their intelligence grows, rather than, you know, you have to be intelligent to surrender to Krishna. So I think that corroborates what you're saying. Now they're Brahmins, so now they're the most intelligent. Having said that, and it's true what you said, I totally agree. There are, I think, when Prabhupada commented on these statements, it often was practical, like what is a woman capable of doing? What's a man capable of doing? Where is a man weak? Where is a woman strong? So like for most men, if you give them a 3-year-old, a 3-month-old baby, or a 1-month-old baby, or a 6-month-old baby, the wife gives it to you and said, I'm going back to my work, you stay home and take care of the baby in the house. Some men will like it, but most men will find it more difficult than women. So it's not a criticism of men. It's just nature, that the woman has that nature, so she can do it. So sometimes Prabhupada would point those things out. And in one talk, it was a morning walk, he said, I'm not saying it's better or worse, it's just nature is different. So what you said is true, but nature is also different. And it's not a criticism of one being better or worse, but distinguishing. If you want to define it spiritually, you could say, okay, it's lower because you're more attached to kids than your husband, or you're more attached to the home. But that's the quality of the woman, because children need stability and affection and attachment. And so women tend to be more nesting than men, and which is what you need for kids. So it's good. But from the spiritual perspective, it looks bad because you should be detached. And just, you should, you know, have one little box and all your possessions in a box and be ready to travel within a half hour when we tell you we're sending you to go on Sankirtan anywhere. You're a man. That's, you know. And women can do that, but it's harder generally. It's less of their nature. So I think that's where you also get this less intelligent thing, you know, like defining it on that standard, if using that definition. But at the same time, even if you say, okay, that's true, they're more attached to home and so forth, it still doesn't mean that because of that, they're less Krishna conscious than their husbands. Right? You know, my wife is, she's like really into puja. She's, you know, we've had deities since we've been married. She's done puja every day. She doesn't miss. You know, it's like, whoa. She's more attached than I am. She has to beg me, come help me do the puja. I'm like, okay, all right. But so I look at that and I go, well, she's way more advanced on that level. Or we'll go sometimes the temple, we'll visit, and she'll just be in front of the deities, just staring. Like, and I'm there for a minute or two and she's just there. Like, and she'll tell me everything about the deities. So when you're married, you see all the qualities that your wife has that you don't have, isn't it? So, you know, this absolute definition of intelligence, maybe shastrically and, you know, historically, that was used as a definition. Yeah, okay, so that's a definition. But it doesn't mean that that quote-unquote attached woman is not more Krishna conscious than you, despite of her womanly nature. Right? So I think that's important. And that's why when this discussion came to the transcendental level, Prabhupada kind of just dissolved it on that level. You can't, you know, some people want to make Prabhupada like a very traditional guru. And in many ways he was, but in many ways he wasn't. And you can't make him just traditional, because he wasn't just traditional. And one man told Prabhupada, my wife is more advanced than I am. So Prabhupada didn't say, well, hurry up, you better become more advanced because you're the husband and you're the guru. Prabhupada just said, well, if she's more advanced, then you take instruction from her. You know, that kind of breaks all the tradition, like, that there ever was about husband being guru and wife subordinate, right? And Prabhupada just flipped it around. Okay. Prabhupada didn't think, well, that's impossible. He didn't write her back. He didn't write him back. It's not possible that your wife's more advanced than you, because she's a woman and you're a man. He just wrote back, if she's more advanced, take instruction from her. So if we misunderstand this, it creates all kinds of craziness, doesn't it? Like artificially, you're creating this dichotomy between men and women where it may not exist at all. And you can't see or appreciate the value of a woman. And a woman may not even appreciate it in herself if she misunderstands it also. I have a joke. I don't know if this is true with you women, but the joke is like, yeah, yeah, the men think they're more intelligent, but we know we're more intelligent. Because Chandragupandit said, women are 7 times more cunning. Look up the word cunning in the dictionary. Cunning means sharp. They're sharper. You know? Sometimes the man's trying to do something, the woman just goes, here, put this here, do this, that, that, let's go. And he's like, what happened? He says, I got it all, let's go. So sometimes, you know, like, they're good secretaries, and, you know, it's like, you know, you try to get a man as a secretary, and he can't remember where he put his phone, and, you know, he's like, he's ate too much, and he's sleeping now, and, you know. So that's what cunning means. They're sharp. Like, so it's a different kind of intelligence. So they're actually more intelligent in many ways than men on that level. But you use this spiritual level of intelligence, detachment and sober and like that, which many men themselves are not, then that's where you get that. So that's my understanding. I'm just, you know, whatever the understanding you have or anyone has, I'm just concerned that our men don't mistreat women and women don't mistreat themselves, and the women don't hold themselves back thinking, oh, I'm just less intelligent, I can't do this. I mean, you know, there's some really amazing women in our movement who could talk circles around you. I'm on a temporary committee with some women to solve a problem, and both the women are lawyers. And I'm just like a university dropout. Like super intelligent, you know, we're discussing things and there's like really clear, you know, it's like, it's amazing, you know. I would never think like, oh, these women aren't smart. I'm like, that. They go, what do you think, Mahamra Prabhu? I go, you guys are smarter than me. You know, what do you think? I don't think, I'm a man. Who cares what you think? Forget your law degree. I'm a man. We should never think like that. That would be absolutely stupid, wouldn't it? That would definitely prove that men are less intelligent than women if you think that way. Right? Anyway, that's my understanding. Now, some men might say, Prabhu, can I talk to you after class? Talk now. If you don't agree, raise your hand. Now's your big chance. Yes. Here it comes, ladies. I may have to retract everything I said.
Thank you very much. I'm just a guest here today, but I find it really interesting. So my question is connected to what you were just saying about men protecting women. And the difference between one and the other, and then just say it like it, not necessarily the sex, right? So I would like to make a statement, or actually ask, if the virtue that is needed in a man...
The what?
The virtue, the
virtue.
Skill, the virtue, yeah. To protect the woman that we are talking about, is actually the courage and the virtue of a woman to take care of the family and be attached to it, as we are speaking right now, is compassion. So the question is, if we are now checking what's male and what's female energy, mm-hmm. if we could say that the courage would be a symbol for man energy and the compassion would be a symbol of woman energy. So the more you have one or the other, the more you can identify with one or another pole, like man and a woman.
Yeah, I like that. I think we could maybe make a broader category and say protector and protected. Because I heard a story, I don't know if it's true, I don't have any reason to believe it's not true, but they found in the Israeli army, because women go in the army, and they found that when women fight side by side with men, the difficulty they run into is if a man is shot or wounded, the men will keep fighting. But if a woman is shot or wounded, it's their nature to protect. They can't let a woman lie there shot like they could a man. Because it's man's nature to protect. And women, by nature, like to be protected. That's the way God made them. They're uncomfortable if they have to fend for themselves. And let's say somebody's giving Alina a hard time. And her husband's there. She'll be waiting for him to step in and tell that person to be quiet, right? And if he doesn't, she'll say, "I didn't feel protected by you," right? That's the nature of woman, not just her, any woman. So the courage is part of that. And the compassion, you know, is part of it. But women should be courageous also in their own way, and we should be compassionate in our own way. But when Prabhupada married couples, he would always say to the men, your duty is to protect her. You know, protection means also providing, you know, that kind of protection. Give a home, take care of everything, that she doesn't have to worry because she's taking care of the kids, and that's enough trouble and anxiety. Make sure she has no worries. You know, everything is, you know, there'll be food, there'll be this and that. So that women naturally like to do that. And men naturally like to protect. And one of the biggest anxieties for men is if they can't provide for their family. Right? That's like the worst thing for a man. Because he has that protection nature. And if there's, you know, a problem in the economy, unemployment is up, and he can't provide, that destroys him to the core. Isn't it? Yeah. So God made us that way. Protector, protected by nature. We like to, you know, we like to take care of women. So, what you said is true, but that's the broad category, and you could put other qualities within there. It's kind of like we need a workshop to define what is a woman and what is a man, especially nowadays, because it's really getting skewed. It's become a gray area, what is man and what is woman. I have a funny story, though. Can I tell a story?
Yes. Yeah.
Some of you have heard this story, if you've listened to my classes. But it's very relevant now, because you, if you follow the news at all, know what's going on in America. There's a lot of freedom of expression now, to be a man if you're a woman, to be a woman if you're a man, to be both in one day, you know, just like try it out, you know, like just, you know, experiment. So when I was first coming to the temple, this was a few months before I joined, there was a man coming, I think it must have, he was probably like 25, and I was 19, so he was a little older than me. And he would come, and he would wear dhoti, saffron dhoti, he'd come. He wasn't shaved up. And I was also coming, we were both new. Now one day he showed up in a sari. So I go, okay. Alright. And he was, you know, chanting in a high voice, like a woman. It's like, alright. And then a few days later, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Brahmachari. And then a few days later, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, sorry. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, being this liberal guru, said, it's not good that one day you're a man, one day you're a woman, so you will need to decide which one you want to be and just stick with that. That was his instruction. So, this is called gender fluid. Like, in the morning you're a man, and then you feel like being a woman, so you change your dress in the evening. So Prabhupada's saying, don't be gender fluid. Like, way before this whole gender thing came up, he was already saying, be a man, be a woman, whatever you are. And so, in Kali Yuga, some men may prefer to be like women. They may have that feeling, I want to be protected. Right? It's just how it is. And some women will be more male. What can we do? It's all mixed up. But generally, women want to be protected. That's when they're happy. They don't have to worry about things. And we guys, you know, look at our bodies. They're bigger. Generally, stronger. You know, we're made that way. We go out and fight. You know. I also read that if a woman becomes a CEO of a company, she'll experience much more stress in that position than a man will. It's just not, generally they're not constituted to be in those positions as men are, you know. Sometimes you have to be brutal, right? And it's harder for women to be brutal because they have the mother nature. But men are like, rah, I eat wood for breakfast, you're fired. You know? Like, no, don't fire me, out. You know, it's hard for a woman to do that, harder. Right? Yeah. So, it's just you have a body, it's just what it is. It's not better or worse, it's just designed for different things. But if the men think, oh, the women are bad, then what kind of crazy moment do we have? And if the women come and think, I'm just a stupid woman, I can't do anything. You know, it's like, that's why Prabhupada started ISKCON, to make women a bunch of zombies and think they're stupid. I don't think so. He empowered them, go out, do it. And like you said, Prabhupada saw and said, oh, I can see women are more intelligent than the boys. It's Kali Yuga, you know, it's like everything's different. Right? Yes. Yes, yes.
If I may just one sub-question, I see there is a lot of talking about intelligence, right? So
talking about?
Intelligence.
Intelligence, yeah.
So why would be the intelligence so important for being devotee? Yes, I don't see, to be honest.
Not IQ. IQ, yeah, not spiritual intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is defined as the ability to discriminate what is healthy spiritually and what is not healthy, to have that kind of intelligence. So not the IQ, but the ability to see, to be clear enough about what is proper action, to have spiritual vision, to not be bewildered by material things. That's spiritual intelligence. But the fact is, there's millions of men who are bewildered in that way, that don't have spiritual intelligence. So it's kind of funny when we say that, you know, men have this, you could say maybe they have the capacity in general a little more because they can use their intelligence without emotion. They can turn emotion off, and women have it both, so it's harder. But of course it's a generalization, and that's what it means. To understand I'm not the body, that's requires spiritual intelligence. To be detached, to understand these things are bad for me, that requires spiritual intelligence. So generally men are supposed to have it more than women or more easily, but it's Kali Yuga, so it's all mixed up. From what I've seen, pretty mixed up. So it's time for a funny story. Some of you know this story. I'm in Israel. I'm staying at the house of one bachelor devotee. And downstairs he has a kitchen and a living area, and upstairs the bedrooms. And downstairs, the curtains on the windows are old dhotis. The dining table is a little plastic table with plastic chairs. And I swear, the sofa looks like he found it on the street and just brought it in. It looks like really dirty and holy. Not holy, spiritual, but with holes in it. I'm like, okay. Looks like your standard brahmachari ashram. Yeah. And then two brahmacharinis came over. I was there in the morning for breakfast. So they were bringing breakfast over. And they said, look at this house. A dhoti for a curtain. A plastic table in the dining area. It's like one of those cheap white plastic, you know, those chairs you sit in and they break and really thin, fall over like that. You know? And a sofa that looks like he found it on the street. What's up? What's up with this? I was having fun with them. I said, why do you think he lives like this? And they both said, because he's not married. So a man can live like that. It's like, whatever. Prabhu, maybe you should get some curtains. What do you mean I have curtains? I don't understand. What are you talking about? I mean, like curtains, you know, those things that you buy in the store, they call them curtains. Why do I need those? I have a dhoti. So these differences do exist, right? Now, I have to say something. And many of us have seen this. Sometimes you have a brahmachari, and he's a nice devotee, but he's not so together. He's a little bit like on the lazy side. Maybe not so organized like that. And then he gets married and his wife whips him into action. Put your socks away, clean that, do this. And he's actually, you see him, he's like way more together now than he's married. Have you seen that? Did that happen to you? You are already totally together, right? Yeah. Yeah. But sometimes it happens like that. You know? So it's funny, you know, like to demean women when you see that some men were just like floundering around, you know, two different color socks, you know, a tangerine dhoti and an orange shirt. And, you know, it's like they were a mess, right? And they get married and they look better. They're, you know. Have you seen that before? It happens. You should have seen me before I was married. Oh my God. So, you know, so it's funny, you know, that we would demean women when we see so many men became better after they got married. You know, and woman is Maya, right? She's the devil, she's the worst, you know. I once gave a talk to a bunch of sannyas candidates, and I said, could you imagine the Hare Krishna movement and we were not allowed to get married? What would it look like? And I said, the prostitution business in the temple vicinity would be well serviced. They would be doing a lot of business. And men would end up leaving ISKCON so they could get married. It's kind of a shock, these sannyasis. None of them had ever been married before. It was like the, you know, women are bad, evil. They go. That these women have helped so many men be stable. And without women, so many of the men would be, you know, what would they do? How would they go on? Right? And of course, women are bad, less intelligent. It's really interesting, don't you think? So, did I make it? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for everything. And I'm not going to argue because I think it's useless. As a woman, necessarily. Okay. And I'm almost 50 years old. And actually, last weekend, I was in Radhadesh driving 14 hours by car by myself just to reach my spiritual master. And I still have to see a brahmachari do that. I'll open and close. Okay. A quote. And
wait. I didn't understand the last thing. You still had to see a brahmachari?
No, I still have to see a man do this. Take the car and drive by himself 14 hours without even a break just to do gas and to see sound. I'm talking about spiritual.
That's a challenge, guys. Get in your cars now. Start driving.
Yeah. What I want to say is, talking about spiritual, since we are in Kali Yuga, seeing what spiritual intelligence, which is actually what you are interested in, not in IQ, is if you look generally in the temples, meaning spiritual gatherings and everything, there are much more women than men.
Yeah.
Numerically speaking.
Yeah.
So, which means that at this point in Kali Yuga, okay, women have much more spiritual intelligence than men because we are more than you. So, there is no point in arguing whatsoever. So you are the one taking out this because you feel lower, because the kind of way you feel threatened, because you are not as a man as you are supposed to be.
Whoa. You guys going to take that? Sitting down? Oh my God. Now, they could say, I will be their lawyer, their advocate. They could say, women definitely, lately, especially the last 10, 20 years, there are more women coming to ISKCON. In Prabhupada's time, there was less. I don't know why. Say, women definitely have more spiritual inclination. Now, spiritual intelligence. Yeah, you could say that. If the guys were more intelligent, they would become devotees. You could say that. But definitely the spiritual inclination is stronger. And they have more faith. That was what Prabhupada said. They believe more easily, and men are like, I don't know. In Mexico, in South America, it's mostly women. You're like 70%. In China, it's 85%. I'm in Mexico, I go, where are the guys? They're at the pub drinking tequila. That's what they do in Mexico.